So I mentioned at the end of this year a few weeks ago, and I made it as a sort of brief comment because we were running out of time. But I had mentioned that there was a tshuva published by the Conservative Law Committee, Conservative Movement Law Committee, saying that Stam Yeinam, that the wine of non-Jews, that prohibition is no longer relevant, and that was something that had to do with intermarriage. But they felt like, you're not really preventing intermarriage that way anyway, and there were, there's a whole discussion there. But what's interesting is that there was on May 2nd, 2023, just about a month ago, this Conservative Law Committee answered a question: may one who's observant of Hilchot Kashrut order food from a vegan or vegetarian restaurant which has no supervision? So one thing to point out, and this happens sometimes in a lot of the conservative tshuva, is that sometimes they're answering a question that, in some ways, the people have voted with their feet otherwise, anyway. And this is an example where a lot of conservative Jews, even more observant conservative Jews, have already been eating dairy out or vegetarian out or vegan out for that matter. So the question, in some ways, is not, the scope of the tshuva, in terms of its impact on how people act. There's what to be discussed, but one of the questions, of course, that comes up in terms of eating vegan or vegetarian in a non-kosher restaurant, and there are also Orthodox rabbis who have been dabbling this also about giving hashgacha to vegan or vegetarian restaurants. And one issue that has to be addressed is the question of bishul akum, that even if the ingredients, obviously, there's not going to be a concern, there's likely not going to be a concern of basar b'chalav of dairy and meat. And there's not going to be a question of non-kosher meat and the like, but we observe that there's a prohibition of bishul akum that a non-Jew is not allowed to cook for a Jew, and that in theory should be relevant. So some have wanted to argue that, first of all, if the concern is really about intermarriage, then a cook in a restaurant is not relevant to that. But one of the arguments made by the rabbi who wrote this tshuva was that, well, the Rambam groups pot akum, the bread baked by a non-Jew, and bishul akum, and chalav akum, all these get grouped together in the Rambam, which must mean that they all have sort of a uniform stature. And if poskim were lenient with the bread of non-Jews, as we saw last week in certain circumstances, then that should apply here as well. So first of all, I'd say that's a little bit of a flawed methodology because the proof is sort of in the pudding. Right, poskim, in fact, were lenient about bread baked by a non-Jew, and some of that had to do with a issue of necessity. But those same poskim never extended that to bishul akum. So I think the methodology there is fundamentally flawed. To try to yes, there are certain commonalities between all the different things that a non-Jew is or isn't allowed to serve or cook, but there's also differences. So to apply one to the other, carte blanche is a little bit problematic. But again, I think one thing that's worth reiterating, he writes here, while concern about the effects of intermarriage upon our community are preeminent, we do not feel that these forms of restriction are appropriate. We welcome social interaction with all ethical human beings, whatever their religious beliefs. Thus, notwithstanding the halachic literature in this regard, we feel it is correct to complete the elimination of all these decrees. Gentile cooked food is no longer to be considered prohibited. That's the conclusion they came to. So they acknowledge that intermarriage is a concern. They might even be correct that if they came in and said, intermarriage is a concern and therefore we're not permitting bishul akum, that's probably not preventing intermarriage because the people who are intermarrying are often not keeping other aspects of kashrut anyway and would not be following what this law committee says anyhow. However, in some ways I sympathize with their suggestion that that interaction with ethical human beings is a good thing, and there's a Meiri that talks about how nowadays Christianity and Islam, to whatever extent that they're considered monotheistic, so they are ethical in nature and people who are generally refined. So, with all that said, there is a point where I think the Torah does mandate that we separate ourselves. That's what Kedusha is about. Kedusha. It's interesting that in Sefer Kedusha of the Rambam, the Book of Holiness, includes there the issue of forbidden relationships and the issue of forbidden food. And it's because those experiences are things where a Jew has to separate themselves, whether it's from separating from a particular act, but also just this idea that Lahavdil ben Yisrael le'amim, Jews and non-Jews are different. And of course, we should be respectful. We should have friendly interactions with non-Jews. If you have coworkers, of course, it's good to have like a, you know, a to have a friendship. It's per se is not a bad thing, but to sort of destroy all barriers and say that all interaction is appropriate, I think it's that mentality that itself is fueling the intermarriage and assimilation problem. So that's the balancing act. Is that, and I think that's exactly what Chazal had in mind. So, of course, again, being respectful and even, you know, being friendly itself is not a bad thing, and we should have good relationships, and there should be cordiality, and especially for people who interact on a regular basis, people have colleagues, people have neighbors. So, some cordiality is good. But there have to be some boundaries also, and I would say that you know, whether it's bars, restaurants, whatever it is. So I think, you know, once you sort of take down those barriers of being able to eat together on a regular basis in an intimate setting, I think is a lot of where the problem really does lie. So of course, again, I don't think the conservative movement would solve its own intermarriage problem by doubling down on the Isser Bishul Alkum per se. But I think sort of giving up on it as a value also is problematic. So I think that's a value for us to keep in mind also for ourselves, is that that's, you know, that's the balance that we do as Orthodox Jews who interact with society, is that you know, we have certain boundaries, but that doesn't mean that you know, I would never give the message that unfortunately some of our co-religionists give about non-Jews, which I find to be a little bit offensive sometimes, but there has to be a balance. Okay. Again, if anybody has comments about that, I'd love to hear at some point, but I do want to make sure that we get to the regularly scheduled program. Let's talk a little bit about, let's talk about milk. We talked last week about bread baked by a non-Jew. Let's talk about milk. And milk is also an interesting one, but it comes from different considerations than what we've discussed so far. Let's go to page, I think for you it's 112. Chalav akum, milk that's produced by a non-Jew. This is something that's addressed in the Gemara Avodah Zarah, again, in the same neighborhood as the discussions about other cooked food or bread by a non-Jew. So let's talk about milk. So the Gemara says, verse 21, Chalav l'mayne chushla. What's the concern about milk that's being produced by a non-Jew? If a non-Jew milks a cow and gives me the milk, so what's the concern? If there's a concern that they're going to give me milk from a non-kosher animal instead of a kosher animal, so, for example, camel milk, pig milk, all those things would not be kosher. So if that's a concern, so so milk from a kosher animal would be white. Milk from a non-kosher animal would be what the Gemara calls yarok, although yarok in the Gemara does not literally mean green. We're not talking about, you know, milk that's green as grass. But as it's on the footnote here, and green can sometimes mean blue, can mean yellow sometimes in the Gemara. So we're talking about something with a yellowish tinge, right? Not a radically different color, but it has a different color. So that's one possibility the Gemara raises. The imishum yaruve, or maybe there's a concern that the kosher milk will be mixed with non-kosher milk. So nekum, let's curdle it. Curdle is this process. Don't entirely understand the science behind it because that's not my area of expertise, but curdling changes the pH level, the acidic level of, it makes, I think, the milk more acidic. And as a result, the sort of the liquid, it becomes like a sort of separation between like a solid and a liquid. And that's how you get cheese. So let's curdle the milk. Milk from a kosher animal has the ability to be curdled. But non-kosher milk will not be able to be curdled. So So do an experiment and see if that milk could be curdled. So that means that it's kosher milk. So the Gemara gives both of these consideration. So if the concern is that the milk is not going to be kosher from it's going to come from a non-kosher animal, so we have a couple of different ways of being able to distinguish. So the Gemara answers, "Idka by Lagvina hachinen." So if one desires to do it as cheese, so yeah, one can curdle it because you'll be able to you'll be able to distinguish. But what are we talking about here that I want to use non-kosher milk? The kabay le kamcha. I want to use it for kamcha, which is a food item that contains milk. So in that case, it's not going to be practical to curdle it. I'm not going to be able to really tell the difference. So we have to say that milk from, unless if it's produced by non-Jews, so we have to be concerned. And then Gemara says, "Vinishkol mine." So let's take a little bit of milk and curdle it in order to test it. So Kavan Tahor Nami, Ika, so kosher milk has a whey, which is not curdle. So that's going to make it very difficult to tell if it's kosher or non-kosher milk, because maybe it's not curdling because it's simply whey. Or maybe it's not curdling because or part, there's some whey in it. Or maybe it's not curdling because it's not kosher. So that's not going to really help. Maybe we are talking about a case where I want to use it. Cheese, ika de kai bein atzer. So maybe that there would be some milk that remains in the crevices, so you're not going to be able to really distinguish. So what emerges from this is that you're not allowed to consume a milk produced by a non-Jew. And by produce, I mean being collected and sold by a non-Jew. Not because of the concern of intermarriage. We're not saying that when you buy them, milk from the from the milkman that there's a concern of intermarriage. We're saying that there's a concern that the milk itself might not be kosher, and there's no real way of being able to tell if that milk is kosher or not. That's what the Gemara has. So the Rambam codifies this, and he talks about different ways of testing, but he says Ubneza yitein adin aser. Any milk that's found that was owned by a non-Jew is prohibited. Shema irev bo chalav behem atzmeh. Maybe there is non-kosher milk that's mixed in, and that would be problematic. That's what the Rambam paskins. So the Shulchan Aruch, however, gives us gives a little bit of context. Verse 23, it says chalav shechalav goy ve'en yisrael ro'ehu aser. So when is it that milk done by a non-Jew, owned by a non-Jew, or collected by a non-Jew is prohibited? It's when a Jew doesn't see what he's doing at all. And consider Shema Yirev Bo Chalav Tameh, because maybe the non-Jew had mixed in non-kosher milk. So that's the concern. But again, the implication from Shulchan Aruch is that maybe it's not that the Jew themselves have, when it comes to Bishul Akum, so the Jew not only has to see the cooking, but has to participate in it. Here, Shulchan Aruch is saying implicitly that the Jew has to be able to see what's going on. And the Rama writes, the Rama puts in another thing that's important to know. So when it came to Bishul Akum, so that was more of a question if kosher food cooked by a non-Jew, would that scrape up one's dishes and utensils? So there's a question. But Chalav Shel Goy and Moser's Kelim Shnisbashal Bahem Kishar Yisir. But if it's milk by a non-Jew, so we have to assume that the dishes and utensils are not kosher, even though we don't know for sure that the milk wasn't kosher. It's only an uncertainty. But there's a concern that the milk that came in contact with the utensils was not kosher, and therefore we have to treat it like non-kosher food coming in contact with the dishes, and they would have to be kashered. Well, wait a second, but with the milk, we don't know for sure that it's not kosher. That's the whole institution of requiring a Jew to see or to be involved in the production of the milk, is that it could be that it's regular cow's milk, but we don't really know 100% if it's cow's milk, if it's pig's milk, or if they added something to it that's not kosher. We're saying that if, let's say I use Milk, that's that's I buy milk from a non-Jew, and then I cook, you know, I cook something with that milk and put that on my utensils. I can't use these utensils anymore without koshering them. And that's because we don't know for sure that that there was anything treif involved here, but we also don't know for sure that it's not treif. So you have to kosher. Exactly. But the Ramah saying even if you do, okay. So just to clarify, so Simcha was asking about the need to kosher, and so yes, you shouldn't be buying milk from a non-Jew in the first place. But the Ramah saying that if you went ahead and did that anyway, or maybe you accidentally did, but we have to be concerned that there was something non-kosher in there. You'd have to kosher the utensils. Okay, so the Gemara addresses what I mentioned was in the Shulchan Aruch in source 24, page 114. So Tanina lahad tana rabbanon. So we learn from the Mishnah in which the sages explicitly taught in a Baraita, Yoshev Yisrael betzad edro. If a Jew is sitting beside a Gentile's flock, betzad edro shel oved kochavim, gove kochavim cholev lo umevi lo veino choshesh. So then a non-Jew can milk the cow, milk his animals, and bring the milk to the Jew, and he doesn't need to be concerned. Okay? In other words, we're saying here that if a Jew is nearby, they can see what's going on, or potentially see what's going on. So then the non-Jew can still milk the animal. Yeah? So the Gemara asks, hey, Chidame, what are we talking about here? E. So if there was a non-kosher animal among the animals, so that should definitely be problematic. If there was no non-kosher animal around there, then of course it should be permitted. Why would it be allowed? If the non-Jew only had cows that he was milking from. So of course, if a Jew is sitting nearby, it should be fine. And if there are, you know, if there are cows and pigs around, so then why should it be okay for a Jew to be sitting sort of like nearby, and then use the milk from the non-Jew? So the Gemara says, in fact, olam de'ika davar tameh, we're talking about a case where there is where there are non-kosher animals around. But the Jew who's standing by can see the Gentile. But maybe you'll say that, well, when he's sitting, maybe, so certainly if he stand, if the Jew is standing by while the non-Jew is doing the milking, so that shouldn't be a problem. But let's say the Jew is sitting sort of like, you know, at a distance, right? He's sitting with the non-Jew's animals. He sees what's going on from a distance, but there are both pigs and cows around. So maybe that should be problematic. Maybe you'd say, maybe because he's sitting, he's not going to be able to really see what's going on. Maybe the non-Jew is mixing in non-kosher milk with the kosher milk. Since when he is sitting, it's oh, sorry. Since when he's standing, he's able to see. You're tute mirtat velo me'arve. So essentially, when the non-Jew knows that the Jew is around and watching what's going on, so the non-Jew is going to be concerned that the Jew will see that he's doing something wrong and will call him out on it, and then have a problem. So in other words, when a Jew is able to be supervising, or even if there's a concern that a Jew will come into the picture, so the non-Jew is not going to do anything that he knows will upset. Well, that will upset the Jew, that will cause the milk to not be kosher. So that's what Gemara says here, right? Again, if a Jew is sitting nearby, when the Jew is nearby, that is sufficient. So the Mordechai, one of the Rishonim from the line of the Baalei HaTosos, in source 25, he says that some might learn from this Gemara that if it's clear that there are no non-kosher animals in among this non-Jew's flock, and he's only milking from kosher animals. So then I should be able to buy milk from a non-Jew, even if a Jew's not really observing, right? But it seems like there's two things going on here. Either we have to assume that all the animals are kosher, and that's fine, and that's why it's fine if he's specifically sitting, or maybe even if there are non-kosher animals around, since the Jew might come in, maybe the non-Jew's afraid. But let's say it's only cows. Let's say there's only cows. We know there's only cows in this flock. So maybe I should be able to buy that milk, because what's he mixing in? What's going to be unkosher, not kosher about that? And yet the Mordechai says that line of thinking, taut hu b'yadam. That's a mistaken way of looking at it, because otherwise the Gemara should have just explicitly talked about a case when there's no Jew around, in which case it would have said, if there's no Jew around, but we know all the animals are kosher animals, then it's fine. But that's not what the Gemara said. The Gemara said that at the very least there has to be a Jew who's sitting nearby. Maybe he can't really see exactly what's going on, but he'll bust in. But that's only if the Jew is nearby and potentially goes in. But if there's no Jew around whatsoever, we still have a prohibition of taking milk from a non-Jew. Correct, we're not willing to make the assumption that really all the animals are kosher. So we think that all the animals are kosher, but if there's no Jew nearby, so how do I know that he doesn't have anything else there? Or maybe all the animals are kosher, but he snuck something in. We don't really know. So Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Source 26 on page 115. Eacholet beveito. If a Gentile is milking an animal in his home, v'Yisrael yoshev bachutz, and a non-Jew sitting outside, imedua she'ein lo davar tamei be'edra mutar. So if we know that there's nothing non-kosher, it's permitted, because we can assume that the non-Jew is going to be worried that a Jew, even though he's sitting outside, he'll come in and if he's doing anything wrong, he'll see it going on. So the Ramah adds in a caveat that ideally a Jew should be at the beginning of the milking process, and he should also see inside the vessel to determine that there's no non-kosher milk in the vessel. He should see that all the milking that's being done is from the kosher animal. And then if he walks out, sits outside, then that's fine. But the caveat that's brought here is that that if a Jew is sitting outside of the milking area, and we know that there's no non-kosher animals, so that is sufficient. So Taz emphasizes that, in fact, that the person has to be, sitting, that somebody has to be sitting nearby, has to be outside, right? It can't be that there is absolutely no Jew present. That would be problematic. Ramah does come in Source 28 and suggests, and this is going to, this is opening up potential leniencies. He says, Shvachot shecholvot habehemot v'veit Yisrael o b'dir shalahem. If non-Jewish maidservants are milking cows in the home of a Jew or in their pen, so as long as there's nothing really blocking the view and there's no non-Jewish home sort of in between, so we allow them to milk even though there's no Jew at all. So Arma says a little bit more leniently than what we saw before, that if a non-Jewish maidservant is milking in the home of a Jew or in their pen, so as long as it doesn't have to be that the Jew is sort of right there and watching right over there, but as long as it's being done in a Jewish home or in a Jewish neighborhood, and there's nothing that there's no way for the non-Jewish maidservant to be hiding what's going on, so that would be sufficient. That's already beginning to open up some leniencies. So the Pri Chadash learns from here that, and I'm going to read this in English, if non-kosher milk is not found in the vicinity, or if it's found but it's more expensive, one need not prohibit milk by a Gentile when a Jew did not see it. Rather, it is permitted to buy milk from the Gentile. This is a big leniency and Chiddush of the Pri Chadash, seemingly expanding on the Ramah. But he's learning from this that if we can demonstrate that there's no non-kosher milk that would be around, and Not only that, but even if there were non-kosher milk, if it were more expensive, in which case the non-Jew doesn't gain by adding in non-kosher milk, so the Jew doesn't have to see what's going on. We can assume that it's fine to buy milk from the Gentile. This generates a big machlokes haposkim. So on the one hand, the Kaf HaChaim says that it's fine. Really, perhaps one should be machmir. And in an area where this kula, this leniency has not been widespread, so maybe people should be machmir. However, in places where it was accepted to buy milk from a non-Jew, shouldn't protest. That should be considered to be acceptable. And Kaf HaChaim says in the next source, in source 16, on top of page 117, that for those who are strict, so even if the non-kosher milk would be repulsive to Gentiles, you shouldn't buy it from them if the Jew did not see it. But the Kaf HaChaim accepts the possibility of the Pri Chadash's leniency, that in a community where it's been accepted to eat to drink non-kosher to drink milk that's brought by a non-Jew, so that's potentially fine. The Aruch HaShulchan, who by the way is often one to justify communal minhag, but not always, the Aruch HaShulchan in source 31 goes wild on this concept. So to explain outside, so he says, first of all, Chazal did not necessarily distinguish. Right? Sometimes when Chazal make a decree, even if the reason's no longer relevant, that doesn't change the halacha. The halacha stands. Right? For example, the my go-to example on this is the issue of medicine. You're not really supposed to take medicine on Shabbos. You're not supposed to take medicine on Shabbos. And if you just have like a sort of a small headache where it's a minor pain, but it doesn't really interfere with your basic functioning, you're not allowed to take medicine. Why? Because in times of Chazal, to make medicine, you had to grind things, and there was a concern that you might grind things or to make the medicine. Not relevant nowadays, but that law still stands. So likewise, the Aruch HaShulchan says, it's nice that you can argue that maybe there are places where this prohibition is not really so relevant, but Chazal said that we don't drink milk from non-Jews, so we don't do that. He says, moreover, there's a real reason for this concern. He goes into this whole story that one time he had in one of the towns where he was rabbi, there were prominent community members who, if they were traveling for business and they were in a big city, so he and the other people would go to this particular place. They would buy hot milk, and it was fatty milk. The milk came from a non-Jew, and at some point they said, "Hey, how'd you make this milk? It's so good." And the answer was, "I buy many animal brains in the meat market and then melt them with a lot of milk and cook them together, and that is the fat. That is d'oraisa baser b'challav. That is a very, very big problem." And this Baal Bas comes to Aruch HaShulchan hysterical, like, "Look at this big sin I did." Aruch HaShulchan says, "Moral of the story, you might think that the milk is fine, and I bought from a non-Jew, and they're trustworthy, but except that sometimes you don't know when they're adding in something. So even if on the surface level you could make justifications, because I knew what they were doing, and we shouldn't mess." In contemporary times, Chazon Ish in source 32 introduced a chiddush that if there's a government that's supervising the process of milk production and there is licensing and the like, and if a company would receive a harsh penalty for being fraudulent, so maybe that's like the maid servant. Maybe that's like the case in the Ramah, that if there's reason to fear, and it goes back to the Gemara, right? If there's reason to fear, so people aren't going to do the wrong thing. So if the milk being advertised is cow milk, and the government would be very strict about that, so then you can, so then there's room to be lenient. The Minchas Yitzchak again doesn't agree with that because. Again, Chazal said so. So Chazal said so. It's an absolute halacha. We don't. It doesn't matter what the considerations are. But comes from Moshe Feinstein. It's a very famous number of tshuvas or of Moshe Feinstein that are very famous, and he brings a big chiddush because the Pri Chadash and the Chazon Ish and the like were saying that we're assuming that if the animals are kosher. And the government supervising, et cetera, et cetera. We're assuming that it's fine. But the But Igros Moshe takes a step further. He says that if the government is supervising the companies and there's a concern of big fines, it's as if a Jew himself was observing what's going on. So even for those who disagree with the Pri Chadash about the ability to make assumptions, really everybody should be agree that the observance of companies is equivalent to a Jew watching, and therefore for anybody it should be permitted to have milk from a non-Jew. Now Rav Moshe says that Baal Nefesh is Machmir, somebody who is people who want to be strict should be people who aspire to a particular spiritual level should be stringent. He himself was stringent. But he says there are plenty of people who are Shomrei Torah mitzvahs, including good rabbis, who are lenient and they have what to rely on based on these considerations, because the government themselves are like the Jew in the situation. And this is one of Moshe's famous tshuvas, because first of all, it gives basis for many, many Orthodox Jews to be able to not be restricted to Chal of Yisrael. He's basically saying that Chal of Stam, that regular milk from a non-Jew, is the equivalent of Chal of Yisrael. Basically saying that there's no difference. Again, people who are strict should be strict. But he leaves the possibility that it is entirely permitted. The Mishnah Halachos, Rabbi Nasha Klein, again, argued with Rav Moshe, said that what Chazal say goes. You can't something in the Gemara. You need there's a principle in the Gemara that anything that's decreed by a Beis Din, you need a bigger Beis Din and a smarter Beis Din in order to overturn that. And on that principle, again, we don't necessarily overturn things in the Gemara, even if the reasons change. So he argues with Rav Moshe a little bit on that. Rav Avadia Yosef, in source 37, again, I'm kind of just hitting at some fine points because we have about 2.5 minutes left. Rav Avadia Yosef says that in Israel, perhaps it's good to be strict. In Israel, you have kibbutzim. You know, you have a lot of Jews who are milking cows. But he says in Chutzal Aretz, outside of the land of Israel, in the diaspora, perhaps it's difficult to be strict about this, and maybe there is what to rely on. With that said, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was against the conception of Chalav Akum, of Chalav Stam, because he says, Shachalav Goyim Me'oras Feikos Be'muna. By drinking milk from a non-Jew, that is what's giving people the ability to have doubts in Hashem, something intrinsic in the milk. Goes into a larger discussion if tuma, if impurity, is technical halacha, or if there's like deeper meta spiritual things going on there. That was Lubavitcher Rebbe's position. Rav Soloveitchik was lenient and in fact drank a milk, you know, like Rav Moshe said. Rav Soloveitchik drank milk that was produced by non-Jews that didn't have rabbinic supervision, based on a few considerations, and this is brought by Rabbi Chaim Jachter in the name of Rabbi Menachem Kinak, who's the CEO of the OU. By the way, there are a lot of people in Israel who don't like the OU because they allow Chal of Stam. But there were three reasons given by the Rav. Number one, we assume that all of the cows all the milk is coming from the cows, so we don't have to be concerned about that. Number two, we're relying on government supervision, like Rav Moshe said. Number three, technically there have been edicts forbidding drinking milk from an animal that was milked by a non-Jew does not apply today, since the cows are milked by machines. Technically, it's not a human being who's squeezing the udders; it's a machine that's doing it. That's not Chalav Akum. That was the Rav's consideration. So there are other post-game that were lenient. Rav Henkin was lenient. Again, this is different than some of the other things that we discussed. We'll discuss powdered milk and dairy ingredients, and then next week we'll also discuss cheese and one with that. Wishing everyone a wonderful week, and thanks for joining again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Thank you.